The following program is brought to you by Podcast One. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now here's your host, Rory O'Malley.
Hey guys, Rory O'Malley here. Thank you so much for listening to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, brought to you by Podcast One. It is so good to be back. We had a bit of a break for the holidays. I was away with family. The Geffen didn't have shows throughout the holidays, so now we're back. And we're back with a really incredible guest, Trey Parker, the co-creator of South Park, along with his writing partner, Matt Stone. I am a huge fan of South Park. I have been since 1997 when Cartman got anally probed by an alien. There's no beautiful way to put it other than that's what happened on Comedy Central, and comedy changed forever. He also wrote and directed a little show called The Book of Mormon, a show that gave me my big break as Elder McKinley, the tap dancing Mormon. And I got to work on that show for a few years before it went to Broadway and helped develop that character. I got to work with my buddies Andrew Rannells, Josh Gad, Nikki James, and our director Casey Nicola. And it was the time of my life. Trey doesn't do a ton of these interviews, so I was really honored that he sat down to talk with me about his writing process, about the creating of Book of Mormon, how he did it. Even though I was in the room for a lot of that over those 3 years, I wasn't in the other room where he, Matt, and Bobby Lopez were writing, where they were creating, because they would just come out and basically hand us sheets of paper and make us laugh until we were crying. And it's fun to reminisce with him now because it's 10 years ago that we opened up on Broadway. 9 years, but like, I think the first time we sat down and read it out loud was 2008, so 12 years ago. And, you know, just to have the perspective of it now, because here it is 2020, and it is in Los Angeles. It will be at the Amundsen Theater February 18th through March 29th. You have to go see it. There's a new cast, and I will get to go see The Book of Mormon, and it's this beautiful, nostalgic memory for me, and I'm so proud of it, but I also feel like I'm seeing it for the first time because I haven't seen it in a few years. It's a real special gift to get to be a part of the show, and I was glad I got to sit down with Trey so I could thank him for changing my life, and I want to thank Ann Garofino, the producer of South Park and Book of Mormon, who helped put this interview together, and she's in charge of a lot of stuff for Matt and Trey. And it was a really special interview for me. So here is my conversation with Trey Parker. Hi, Trey.
Hello.
I'm so excited to get to sit down and talk with you.
It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah. It's been a long time. And I'm excited because Book of Mormon is coming back to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And even though it's been around for almost a decade now, people are always so excited when it comes to town.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this on my drive over here. I met you and we started working on it 12 years ago.
Wow.
This month.
Wow.
This month?
Wow.
Because I remember it was February in New York. I was working at BlackRock Financial in their human resources department.
Wow.
And I got a call saying Matt and Trey are doing a new musical, but nobody knows what it is.
Right.
And I had to ask my boss for a week off to come and do it. And as soon as I was like, it's the guys from South Park, he was like, you got to do this, man. So I was so pumped to do it. When you started at that period of time, obviously you had like such a huge success with South Park. You were like, you have done so many musicals. South Park is a musical, the movie, the show itself. But when you started that process, What did you expect? You know, here we are 12 years later.
Yeah, I didn't know what to expect. You know, Matt and I, we actually met in college and did this little student film called Cannibal that was a musical.
Oh, yes.
But it was all just because I just grew up loving musicals. But for me, musicals just meant what I could see on VHS, you know, basically yeah. what movie musicals I could see. Because I grew up in this very small town in the mountains of Colorado. But it also meant... as I got into like junior high and high school, there's this group called the Evergreen Players that uh-huh. was a theater that I think sat like 32 people and was, you know, the stage was about 20 feet big but they would do huge musicals, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
It was like, but it was always like, oh, that's my teacher and that's the guy that works at the store and that's the guy. And every production that they would do, it was always the same people. And you know, it was like, to me, that in a way, that's how I grew up with this love of musicals, because it was like just this reason that, you know, two or three times a year you'd get together and watch everyone put on a show.
Yeah.
And it was so community, so tiny,
right.
that's what I really loved about them. And then, you know, at my high school, I did musical. I was actually Danny in Grease.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I see it.
So I just had this love for them, but I also loved music. I loved writing songs and writing funny songs. I was writing funny songs since I was like 12.
Right.
And then, you know.
Who were you writing them for when you were 12?
You know, just writing them. And then by the time I was 14, I got a 4-track recorder, which was, you know, back then was a record studio.
Right.
In your basement, you know. And so me and my friends would just get together on the weekends and either we'd make a movie that was like, you know, make a dumb little comedy sketch movie, or we'd make a song, you know, and then by the time I was, I think it was when I was 16, we made an album's worth of songs and sold them,
right.
You know,
and we sold
like 40 of them, and we felt like, you know, we made like $250 and
thought,
oh my God,
okay.
You know, I was able to quit my job at Pizza Hut and thought, I'm never going to work at Pizza Hut again. And, but you know, so I've always had this thing with musicals, and then I actually went to CU majoring in music at first.
Right.
And then, you know.
Which I don't think people realize.
Yeah.
That's like why music is such a threat in
yeah.
comedy.
No, I was, you know, I always thought I loved, I started playing piano when I was like 9 and I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with writing stuff, and that's what I want to do. I actually went, my first semester, I went to Berklee College of Music, but it was just too far from home. So I went back to CU and was in the music school. But, you know, as a lot, you know, I was just kind of sitting there going, man, I don't know what I'm going to do with this,
yeah.
You know, and then it was just then that the film school at CU was kind of just in its baby stage. They were just starting to offer a degree in film production,
right.
And they had offered degrees in film, like analysis and stuff, but
right.
They hadn't done production. And so it was like 6 of us, you know, that were in the production school. And there's this guy Matt that I met.
I love
in
that
class.
They launch a degree and it's you and Matt. Like,
yeah,
that's a pretty successful launch.
You know, but I think that's part of why, you know, it was so just a few of us. You
right.
know, we were so not.
And
we had to create our own thing. We
yeah.
even had to create our own, what does this exactly mean, you know, at this school? And, you know, and so.
And you're telling professors what you want.
Yeah, and it's like, we want to go make a feature that's a musical. And,
right.
you know, and some
yeah.
professors were like, that's awesome. And some were like, no, you're going to write a thesis on Hitchcock.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but basically it's always been there. And then when we, you know, we got into film and we just got more into that side of it, started making little cartoons at school.
Yeah.
And then that sort of ended up being the thing, but I feel like
sometimes people think they need to get into the biggest film school or, you know, to have a career in
yeah.
what we do. But I always try to say, like, go to the school where you can actually use it as a laboratory.
Absolutely.
For yourself, because
yep.
you're going to be a unique artist and,
yep.
you know, like.
And all we had was each other. We had to, you know, I would be directing my movie and then 2 days later running sound on Tom's movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like we had to learn everything.
But that's the other part of, like, why you're who you are as an artist, because you had that 4-track player when you were young
yeah.
and you learned how to use it.
Yeah.
I think that there's a difference. I think for like me as an artist, I was like, oh, just show, I'll show up. You
right.
figure out
that's
where
all,
I perform.
Yeah.
But you, there was something in you that knew, like, I need to figure out the technology.
Yeah.
I need to figure out how to create this
yeah.
and then sell
I'll never
it.
Forget the night. It was actually on, Cannibal. We did it first, where it was like, okay, there's this new thing. It's called an Avid. And it had just come out. And it was wow. basically like, because even in film school, we were doing the thing. We were doing reels of film, you know, yeah. and cutting and splicing it and putting it together with tape. Yeah. And there was this new thing that had come out that was an Avid. And there was one place in Denver that had it. And we went and talked to him and said, can we use your Avid between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. every day when, you know, when you're just not doing whatever. And worked out a deal with them. And I'll never forget, it's just like me and Matt, there was another friend of ours, and we're just sitting there with the manuals. That's all we had was yeah. like these manuals, and we're learning how to run it. But to this day, you know, I sit, when we're doing South Park, you know, at some point I sit down on the Avid and I cut it, you know, and I know that, you know what right. I mean? And it is.
It gives you that great. Control as an artist of how to tell the story in the yeah. way that you want to, yeah. and you don't have to hand it over.
But it also makes it hard because it makes Matt and I, like, I think as much as we love creating stuff, we also are big problem solvers. Mm-hmm. We love, like, okay, we have no idea how to do this. Let's go.
The challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And how the hell do you make this possible, you know? And so doing Book of Mormon, you know, it was cool because we actually started it after we had met with Bobby. And we kind of realized we both had this passion for making something, a musical about Mormons, which right. I'd wanted to do since high school.
Right.
And we went to Salt Lake City together because he had never been. Matt and I had been a bunch.
Right.
And we're kind of showing him around and really talking about it. But it was like, you know, all I kept seeing was the movie because that's what I knew, really. But a movie musical, you know, and
no, I remember when we first did the reading, it was still like screenplay.
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
on the front, and I was like, oh no, yeah. we need to bring this to Broadway.
And it was still, I mean, really to the end, right? It was the book you guys went off of was a yeah. screenplay.
Yes.
Because that's the only thing I knew how to write.
Right.
You know what I mean? So yeah. I didn't know what musical format was. And I was like, and I remember checking with you guys and being like, is this okay? Can I just do
yeah.
this?
Yeah.
You know, but there's even like, I think there was even in the first drafts, there was like, camera directions and
yeah.
stuff like
oh,
that
yeah.
and things that like you can't do this on stage.
I did the other one of the other musicals that I worked on, a very different musical, was Happy Days the musical for
yeah.
Gary Marshall for years before yeah. I worked with you guys, and he was the director too, and he would always put us on stage, block a scene, and then he'd want to run and he'd go and action. It's like, okay, it's like I love that, like the two worlds
yeah.
coming together. And I definitely got the sense that you guys were in a place where you were trying to figure out if human beings on a stage would say these things.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like, and what it would feel like.
Yes. And, you know, but and at the end of the day, we sort of knew, you know, the difference between having someone say some of the things that are in that on a screen, everyone's gotten used to.
Yeah.
Partly, you know, and when we did it in South Park, people were like, oh my God, you see what they said on TV?
Right.
And now that's not true anymore. So now it had to be, oh my God, you know what someone just said right to my face?
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So that part was pretty funny. But I really remember that you know, and it was Bobby that was first telling us, like, well, if we did this as a musical, like, what do we even do next? And he goes, well, you do this thing called a workshop. And he had to explain what the
yeah.
whole workshop process was. And it's like, we're going to cast it, basically. And we're just going to have everyone sort of learn the songs and read and sing it and see it live. And so we didn't even know there was that process. And by then, I was really used to the control of animation
yeah.
and puppet, where it's like I can absolutely micromanage every single part and
every performance,
too. You know. And so, but then it was just such a joy to, you know, especially those first few workshops we did, where you guys, you know, we're just like
at the Vineyard in a small
yeah, it was just
theater.
Like, oh, here it goes, and I can't say stop, I can't say, hey, let's back up and do
right,
that again.
Right.
It's just going
right,
but it was just really fun to see it take on, you know, its own life, and every part take on its own life, and everything just sort of start to become its own living thing. It was like a living thing,
yeah.
you know, that is so interesting. And that's what's still interesting about it today, is how, you know, I have all this other stuff, these movies and all the episodes of South Park, and they're always there, but they're not alive. You know, and Book
right.
of Mormon is alive. Like, it's right, it's performing right now somewhere.
It's beyond, I mean? It's beyond it's, our control.
Exactly.
Like, I always think, like, we were in the trenches coming up with bits and things
yep.
happening 12 years ago,
yep.
and there's somebody on a stage in London right now doing a bit that
who knows?
Rima Webb did, you know,
right,
to make
right.
us laugh.
yep.
And it's just, it's crazy how you can create something that lives on forever in theater, but in a different way
yeah.
every single night.
Yeah.
I wonder about that because I have the experience of doing shows for years. Like I performed in Book of Mormon probably 800 times,
yeah.
right? You have the experience of living with that, but not in every single
yeah,
performance. But you have done South Park for 20 some years, 307 episodes,
yeah.
I think you guys are at. So it's different, but it's like going to the same playground and having the same characters. Obviously,
yeah.
you guys can, you know, pick and choose your own adventure in that playground. And
yeah.
on Book of Mormon is the same story being told every night. But do you what is the comparison there for you in terms of when you go to Book of Mormon and you have to give notes as a director,
yeah.
you have to think about it as to when you're working on South Park, how do you keep it fresh and
yeah.
that challenge?
You know, with South Park, it's different because every week it's new thing. And you can, and I think that part of why it's stayed around is because, you know, we don't want to just do the same thing over and over again because that's boring to us. So to us, every season is like, all right, let's try something totally different.
Yeah,
you know, and that's and so there's that part to it.
Turn the show into Integrity Farms.
Exactly. Things like that. It's just like, okay, we're gonna do this and that. We're gonna start focusing on adults for a while, and then we'll get back to the kids or whatever. And with you know, it's kind of funny with Book of Mormon for a while. It was, you know, the way it first happened was, I remember opening night, we were sitting there watching it opening night, watching you guys do it. And it was such a blast. And we knew by opening night, we kind of knew we had a hit on our hands.
Yeah.
We all did. And I remember watching it and Bobby Lopez leaning over to me and he said, "This is the best the show will ever be. It all is downhill from here."
Yeah.
and he was partly joking. There was some truth to what he said. And there was some total not truth to what he said.
Yeah.
But you know, he was just being funny. But the truth of it is that, you know, it was the most control, the most like what we intended
right.
ever. You
yeah.
know what I mean? And again, the most what we intended at the time. Who knows if I was to do it right now, I'd make a lot of different choices.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But because we all grow and change, and but for a while. There was, okay, right after that, now we got to go put up a whole new company that's going to tour the country that we're going to start in Denver. And so it was doing it with all those people and then going and doing it in London. And then, you know, and it got crazy. It,
right.
it got to the point where I was like, I need to walk away from this.
Yeah.
Because it is a living thing. And it's almost like a child that you have to say, you're grown up now. And you know what to do.
Right.
You got to go do it, and you'll do things a little differently, and you'll do things, you know, you won't make all the choices I make.
Right.
But to try to go and direct and manage every show is the thing that, and it's weird. It's weird to sit there and know that the show is playing in some places right now, and I don't know a single person, and
yeah.
I've never met a single person doing it.
Right.
You know, like in Australia and stuff
yeah.
like that. You know, it's like, That's a very weird thing because the other things are like kids that you've frozen in time. You know, it's like,
yeah.
here's my kid from South Park from year 9. And it's like, if you watch it, it's exactly what I meant it to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so I always do get this little, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, Book of Mormon's coming to LA, I'm going to go see it. I'm like, yeah, I guess I will too.
Yeah.
But I have to watch as a proud parent and
yeah.
not as a director.
Right.
You know, and that's what's interesting because it'd be very easy for me to go, all right, round everybody up.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't even mean that it would be any better. It just means that part of your brain is, you know, you want to, just like your kid, you know, you want to go, no, like this.
Yeah.
You know, and the truth is the kid's fine. The kid's doing great.
Right.
And the kids might be doing better.
Yeah.
You know, but it's hard to do.
Well, you have kids going
yeah.
into the show playing these roles now. Kids.
Yeah, I know.
I'll call them children.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they are 22 to 25. They were probably not allowed to see it when we opened.
Right.
They were too young.
Yeah.
So they've grown up knowing this music, knowing this show. So
yeah.
they're going to approach it in a completely
totally
different way than
yeah.
obviously we did. I agree with you completely. So many times people ask, you know, do you want to go back into the Book of Mormon? I'm like, are you kidding me? If I could relive March 24th, 2011,
yeah.
opening night, if I could relive that again.
Yeah.
I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I go into the Eugene O'Neill now, I know Karen, you
yeah.
know, I know our stage manager
yeah.
and I know, of course, you know, there's a few cast members who are still
yeah,
there, but that was one of the greatest times of my life. And I agree with Bobby, that was the greatest artistic experience I've ever had
yeah.
because I'll never be able to create the moment of going from working at a financial firm as a temp to opening night over a couple of years and getting to watch you guys work. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, is that workshop process and really the readings, because I was always so amazed, not really knowing how you guys create South Park in 5 days, which is insane for any TV show, especially animated.
Yeah.
It's a really fast process, which is why you guys are so topical. But we would come, we did, I believe it was 3 readings and 2 workshops. So 5 different times we all came together on Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
And every time we would start, it would be, okay, Stephen Remus, is our music director, is going to teach what we have for sure.
Yeah.
And then we'll get new stuff. And you and Matt and Bobby would go in a room.
Yeah.
And we'd be like, where's the new stuff? Have they worked on this
shit?
We've been gone. We've been gone for 6 months.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly, I'd be like, oh shit, have they even thought about the damn thing?
No, we haven't.
And and then 2 days later, you guys would come out of the room with I Believe.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, oh, well, this is just their process.
Yeah. It's very, you know, it's hard. There's an energy to it. And it's really, it's the truth with South Park. You know, part of it is, might have started out of a bit of procrastination, you know, and stuff like that. But
that's the challenge.
It's for me especially, and I think it's true for a lot of people. You know, trying to be really creative and you're just kind of doing a 9-to-5 job, it's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And it's really when it's like, all right, let's all get in a room together. There's a show going on Saturday night. That shit goes fast, and it's all about momentum to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, even with South Park, there's times where we think of a funny show and we start and we're like, oh, this is really funny. You know what? Let's bank it. Let's make some of it before the season starts so that somewhere in the middle of the run, we can like take a few days off because it's so crazy. Take the bank show and finish it up and do whatever.
Right.
And every single time, those bank shows are our worst shows.
Wow.
Even though they're really funny ideas and things like that, but it's just because we put it down and then we do some other stuff and we come back to it and we're like, why was that? What is it? You know, and like trying to refigure it out. And I've just really learned that for us, momentum is everything. And it's it really was with even what happened with Book of Mormon, because we had to constantly pick it up and put it down over the 7 years we were writing it was, because we'd get together and then we'd have to go do South Park and totally forget about it and then get back together. And I would notoriously always lose all the index cards that had all the scenes, ideas and everything and be like, and then we'd sit there for the first few days going, oh, what if it's like this and that and that? And then we'd go, oh yeah, I think that's what we had. I think that's what it was,
And
like just getting back on track. And, but we always let the songs lead the way. Mm-hmm. When we wrote it, we wrote it as an album first. So before we would talk about the structure of the show and the main characters, kind of what it would be, and it'd be like, and then there could be a song like this that would take us to the next, because it was really great because it made it so that the songs, you can't just pluck songs out of, there's not many songs in Book of Mormon that you can take out and the show still makes sense. Because plot happens during the songs and the big important moves happen during a song. So I still see it a lot. There's, you know, a lot of, it's easy to see a mistake being made, whether it's a musical movie or something where it's like, okay, now the movie kind of stops for a song, you know?
Right.
And then it's like all this stuff happens and then we're going to sing about it and then it's going to go back on again.
Right.
And we were very conscious of that. And Bobby was really smart about it too. You know, that's like, no. We just like a good scene in a movie, you know, you need to start somewhere and end somewhere different by the end of it,
right.
You know, and something has happened during the song. And that was really what we worked really hard on. And we made it so that, what was cool was we could sit people down like you and, you know, even just showing it to like my family and stuff. I could just play them the album and they would have a pretty good idea of what the show was, you know, and you'd fill in a few things in between songs and go, so these guys, they get sent to here and then, okay, but you didn't need a lot of, so then the rest of it to us, which is the way we work too, was it's a big algebra equation, you know, and it's just a big, you've got the thing up there and you're like, okay, here we're going, you know, and it's just really talking about, is this the best moment for them? And would this song make more sense here? And I remember that I Believe was one of the last things we wrote because we just didn't feel like anyone knew where Price was at emotionally at that point. And then we made it so that it wasn't, if you remember, you know, I think it was after the song was written. Oh, actually, before the song was written, Do you remember that it used to have all these scenes, a whole scene at the doctor's office where he had the book up his ass?
Oh, yes.
And then a whole scene before, like all these scenes that kind of needed to happen, but then we wrote I Believe and let them all happen within that song and at the end of that song. And it was really one, that was actually a lot of Casey.
Yeah.
Casey was a lot of the one that was like, you know, helped us get out of TV thinking and into, no, we can make a lot happen with the song and a lot happen during the song. It's part of the joy of it, you know?
Yeah.
And that is my favorite, the way that turns into I Am Africa and everything, you know, I that all got condensed to a thing that really made it just drive through.
No, it's cool. True. I remember that was like one of the only points in the show that Price's journey at that point of where his mindset was and what was going on in the show where it was like where it kind of loses steam.
Yeah.
I will never forget when you guys blocked that new cut of I Am Africa and put that scene in there, which I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I get to be on stage when the audience sees this. That was, I mean, there's so many moments that are reveals and funny moments that, you know, the audience gets to see is like having a sparkly vest.
Yeah.
But that one was always like three different reactions in one, you know, to see the Book of Mormon up his ass. But I guess that was, to me, the most impressive thing and the thing I learned most from you guys and the privilege of getting to watch you over 3 years write and create something was that you were never precious about something if just because it was funny. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget Family Home Evening, which was the that song was there from the get-go.
It's a funny song.
It's so funny. The scenes were funny. Yeah. Everything was great. But you guys made a decision to take it out.
It didn't matter to the narrative.
Yeah.
It was funny and it made sense to the narrative. And it wasn't that it went up against anything. But we make these decisions in South Park all the time. You know, in South Park, the number of times that we have something super funny and in a vacuum, you watch it as its own 1 minute piece and it's super funny. But if you put it in the wrong place, that is, it just kind of doesn't need to be there.
Right.
It suddenly isn't funny and it makes the whole thing not as good. And it was just that. It wasn't about Price's family. It was about Price meeting this new kid.
Right.
And his family isn't what the show was about. So it just had to go. You
know? Yeah. It was like get to Africa already. Yeah. Get into the, I mean, that was another turning point in the writing where I think the show just kind of changed and had a different moment as well. I think that, you know, I've been lucky enough to walk into South Park Studios and see people working on the show and to see you recording voices, like that is something I'll be telling my kids. I'm a huge fan, you know, like of way before Book of Mormon. You know, I remember Cartman getting anal probed by the aliens, you know, and that changed what was possible in being funny to me. And I'm a huge fan, but I think that what people would be most surprised by if they came into South Park Studios is how hard you all are working and how serious it can look. Like, where should we put a towelie? Like, where is this? Yeah. Like, how is this?
It's funny for a minute and then it's painful.
Right. It's a lot of hard work because you guys are working so quickly. Can you talk about the speed in which you have to make those decisions?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's basically like we get there on Thursday morning and the show's just aired. The last show just aired Wednesday night. So we can now purge it.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it is just, you've just spent, you know, 6 days totally going crazy and obsessing and every waking thought and for me most dreaming thoughts are about it, and then all of a sudden you gotta go, okay, done, next.
Yeah.
You know, and so we get there on Thursday and we go, okay, door's wide open, what are we doing? Right. And we just start, that's when we just kind of start riffing, and Thursdays are always the most fun days because we're just, anything goes and you're just sort of throwing putty at the sculpture, you know? And
right.
You're just having fun throwing putty and you're just thinking of funny things that don't even necessarily relate. And then, you know, but we got to, even Thursday, we got to say, all right, well, that's really funny. Let's get that into production. Because we got to give them something to be ahead on.
Sure.
And a lot of times everything we come up with on Thursday gets cut out of the show. But at least we're throwing putty and the building starts functioning. And then Thursday we can kind of look at a scene or two and go, yeah, that is fun. Or, you know what, that's good. That's not as good as I thought it would be. And then, you know, Friday you're still kind of slinging, but you're starting to have to take it more seriously.
Yeah.
And then by Saturday, it's really not, it's like, okay, fuck, there's a show coming in 4 days.
Right.
You know, like, gotta make fun time's over. Now we gotta make this. And it's still, you know, you still find your moments where you're like, okay, that's really funny and laughing, hopefully. And but it, again, it's like I said, it's all momentum. It's all just, you don't have a choice. And it's the perfect writer's block kill. You know, people yeah. ask me, you know, how do you not, you know, don't you just sometimes get writer's block? And it's like, it's not possible.
There's no time.
There's no time. There yeah. is no, there, I can't sit there and go, you know, I just can't think of anything today.
Right.
Cause then there's a building of 90 people staring at me going, what are we going to do?
Right.
You know what I mean? And so right. it's like, you know, I got to at least fake it. And a lot of times I'll think, okay, you know what? I'm sick and I'm like so tired. I'm like, I'm just going to fake it. I'm going to write 2 scenes that I know are just bull crap and probably won't be in the show at all. And almost every time one of those scenes will end up being something that's good.
Right.
And, you know, which is sort of what writer's block is. You know, you're just so doubting yourself.
Yeah.
And doubting, you know, you get these moments of doubting what you're
doing.
Do you still,
even like, you know, 20 years of writing South Park and all this great stuff that you've created, do you still doubt yourself as a writer?
Oh, every single week. Every single show. Every show. You can ask anybody. Every show by Monday, I'm like saying, oh my God, what can we call the studio? Can we call Comedy Central and tell them there's no show this week? And I always have to get talked down by Matt and Ann going, oh, come on, it's funny. There's some stuff. I'm like, but there's nothing. You know, I just like,
yeah.
it happens every week. And I want to, almost every week too, even by the time we're done with the show, I'm like, oh my God, I'm embarrassed this is going on television. It's, you know, it's not even finished. It doesn't make any sense. Everyone's going to be like, that was the worst show ever. And then sometimes people are like, yeah, that wasn't very good. But a lot of times those shows, people are like, oh my God, that was the best ever.
Right.
You know, and it always surprises me, you know, so. It was different, you know, with Book of Mormon was sort of the first time that you got to watch something just grow and grow. And because we got to sit there in the audience watching you guys,
yeah,
it was like, I was like, oh, this is, I mean, I think this is fun.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget the time at the, where were we, like the Lincoln Center when I'm sitting next to Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm like, well, Stephen Sondheim's really laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he doesn't really seem to, like, he needs to, like, impress anyone or make
yeah,
you
exactly.
happy. Like, he is genuinely loving
yeah,
this.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that, like, the reason that people like Stephen Sondheim, you know, who loves musicals, obviously, and has made a name in it, he can see that there's this very different. It's very, you know, there's a lot more swearing than in A Little Night Music, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's such a devotion and love of the art form of telling stories through song.
Yeah.
And you guys have always, always had that. And
yeah.
I think that the reason that you are so good at satire and parody is because you always choose things that you really like.
Yeah.
Like, you, Team America to me is one of the most important movies ever made. And especially because in 2004, it was like taking the temperature of the country at that time. And
yeah.
like, you know, you look back at it now and it's still,
yeah.
you know, the monologue about pussies and assholes
yeah.
is still very,
very
important.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, it was a perfect parody of an action movie, you know, like
yeah.
of Michael Bay,
yeah,
you know?
So,
and yeah.
Well, and we had talked about how, because, you know, I still wanted to do musicals, and it was like, we had talked about how Michael Bay movies are musicals.
Right.
It's just they're needle drop musicals.
Right.
But they do the same thing where they know, and sometimes they don't do it successfully, but sometimes they do, where it's like, they're going to use this song that's just a pre-existing song, but they're still going to make it take the movie from point A to point B.
Right.
And that's how it works. Like, you know, and so we had talked about that. Well, let's do that kind of musical, but we'll do the needle drops too.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of the day, that's still, whether it's South Park or whether it's new stuff we're talking about, I just immediately want to get to a piano and figure out, okay, what's the funny song, you know, or songs
right.
that, because, and start building it around that, you know?
Yeah.
So
you still have this playground of South Park, which is, you know, I mean, it's hard to say that something that has always been so great is better than ever, but I think that it's, you guys are more relevant than ever, and I think that because you've grown
yeah.
over time, the fact that you can have a commentary about China
yeah.
in a way
yeah.
that you probably wouldn't your first
right,
season.
Right, absolutely, yeah.
That you have an opinion about that is important, and then, it, like, have NBA players in this show, and then the NBA has a whole controversy about it the next week.
I know. Everyone thinks that it happened.
No.
That we were commenting on that, but it happened after.
Yes.
Yeah, it's
no,
crazy.
No. I mean, that's how relevant you are.
Yeah. But we like, I mean, that's what we like about it is just the fact that we still do the show exactly the way we did.
Right.
You know, back in 97. And it's like we haven't handed any part of it off.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, we work harder on every season.
Right.
And we, in that way, we like it because it's kind of like watching a band more than it's watching a show. It's like you're seeing where the band is in their life. And it's like, you know, you can go back and listen to their old albums. And in some way, they're way rougher and they hadn't learned a lot of stuff. But in some ways, those are better. And then you're listening to what they've done now. And they've hopefully kind of matured as musicians.
Right.
And if you're a fan of the band, I enjoy that. You know, I enjoy that with my favorite band, you know, like The Cure, just seeing, oh, this is where they were in the 80s, where they are now. And we always kind of liked that we've stayed true to ourselves in South Park. And I think that's because Matt and I have each other.
Yeah.
We have each other to check each other.
Yeah.
And as soon as any starts sounding corporate and like, oh, this is a good idea because it makes the most sense for the show. It's like, oh, let's not do it then.
Right.
Let's do what's not good for the show and what's the most messed up thing to do. And, you know.
Well, let's talk about you and Matt, you know, before we wrap up here, because I think it's probably one of the most iconic, like, pairings of writers and creators. And I think that people are so mystified about how you guys create together.
Yeah.
But getting to see it, like, it makes total sense to me because you guys are so similar in some ways and complete opposites.
Yeah, definitely.
And how is it that your writing relationship and your creating relationship has lasted this long, which is not an easy thing to do?
I think, you know, it really, in college, we were just always, we were the guys in the back of the class just trying to crack each other up. And on the, we would have these long, long student film shoots where, like I said, maybe I'd be holding the boom mic that shoot and Matt would be doing the slate, you know, for a camera. And you just have these long, long hours. And Matt and I were really the two people that didn't take anything very seriously. And we're always just trying to make each other laugh.
Right.
And we're just always kind of doing voices for each other and just trying, you know, we were those guys that definitely were annoying to some people that were like, all right, guys, shut up, stop laughing, because no one else was in on the joke, you know, whatever you're talking about. You know that thing where two friends are laughing about something and you're listening, it's like, it's not that funny, but somehow to them it's super funny.
Right.
We were that all the time.
The guys who show up to the Oscars in dresses.
Yes, exactly. You know, it was just like, I think that's because that's where it started, and that at the end of the day, you know, we thought when we were making the South Park movie that it was our swan song. We really thought, this is it, you know. There were articles being written of like, can you believe South Park's making a movie? Like, that show's already done and now, and who's going to go see that movie? Nobody. That was really the pulse of it before, and it was felt like the show, because for a while, season like 2 and 3, when we were doing the movie, we had done what people told us is what you do, which is we'd handed off South Park to other people, and we were letting other people write it, and we were letting other and just letting it try to have its own existence. And meanwhile, we thought, okay, we're going to go do our next thing. And the first thing was the South Park movie. But it was kind of like, okay, so then the show is slipping, and then we're making the movie, and it didn't seem like anyone cared. And we were just like, let's just do the biggest F you. Not even to people, just the biggest, like, we're doing this for ourselves, and we're doing it because one day we can show our kids and go, look at this movie we made, and everyone hated it, you know, whatever. But having that mentality is what we've tried to keep the whole time of, like, and even when we very first started Book of Mormon, it was like, this is crazy. And people were telling us, not only is the show itself crazy, but people were like, are you guys stupid going to do a Broadway show?
Right.
You know, and we had very big people going, what do you think? First of all, you're not going to make any money on Broadway. And we're like, we don't care. We've never cared. We never let money lead us anywhere. And they're like, you know, you're going to go do a thing that some people are going to see and then it'll be gone in 6 months. And, you know, we're like, we don't care. It's just what we want to do. It's just what we want to do. It just sounds funny. And it just sounded funny to us to have these songs said out loud on a Broadway stage, you know.
Let's see what happens.
That really is the truth is, no matter what thing it is, if it's a movie, if it's the Book of Mormon, if it's South Park, it all starts with some people in a room making each other laugh.
Right.
And then, you know, after that, after the sort of magic happens, then the craft comes in. Then it's like, okay, I got to sit down and actually write this into a script and fill in all the blanks, you know, because we just came up with a funny joke, but now I got to make it all, you know, how does that actually happen and who says what and how do we get there and how do I make it actually emotional?
Yeah.
And, you know, but the truth of the matter is that it's that moment and those big moments, it's 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. in that room that you, that the show lives or dies. Mm. And it was that time with Bobby. It was the three of us in, and we were just using my little music studio at home, writing those songs that really was the, there's a lot of craftsmanship that comes afterwards, but that thing of three people sitting there trying to make each other laugh and yeah. just trying to, you know, because at that point it's not work. At that point it is just sort of magic. It is just, oh, that's funny. I'm going to take what you just said and riff on it. And you're going to take what I said and riff on it. And we're just having fun right now.
I mean, it's why you and Matt and you, Matt and Bobby on Book of Mormon, why it works is because you can't make other people laugh in a room by yourself. Like exactly. You literally are the two.
Exactly. No, if you told me, you know, Trey, go write a funny screenplay and you're not going to talk to anyone, you're just going to go off by yourself, I would not be able to do it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I would not. I couldn't write something funny. I could write something, but I don't think it'd be very funny.
Right. You know what I right. mean? Do you, I know we talked about like worrying about if it's going to be good or not as a writer, but do you have, what I'm so grateful about Book of Mormon for and coming to Broadway is that you guys brought a fearless sense of like, I remember you saying, we're not afraid. There's not even censors here. Like, yeah. We can do anything we want. Yeah. So why yeah. isn't everyone just doing it this? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like it opened up a whole new world of possibility for Broadway. But are there any times when you are a little afraid? Like, is there anything that you've put out into the world where you're like, oh, mate, we're going to kill Winnie the Pooh? Or, you know, like, it's like.
No, I mean, I think you can get afraid that things aren't going to be taken the right way.
Right.
And, you know, at the end of the day, and some people would never believe this and some people totally believe it. At the end of the day, Matt and I are very optimistic people and we're very, we believe in other people and, you know, we try, you know, humor is sometimes very cynical and very, you know, bullying or whatever other people want to say. But the truth is, you know, we love pointing out faults in everything and everyone because we all have them.
Yeah.
And we all make a lot of the same mistakes and we all, you know, can fall into the trap of thinking that, oh my God, these people are evil because they're doing this. And it's like, well, you're doing that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You guys have always been able to like put a spotlight on hypocrisy or things in society that you, and yeah. you always have a point of view and you also have a point of view about your point of view being, I remember that Family Guy episode yeah. where you guys were kind of having your fun yeah. with what that show is. And then at the end, it was like, well, at least we're not like self-righteous.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah exactly.
Like,
exactly.
We can,
and
as
that's,
well.
You know, that helps having each other too, because Matt and I can rip on each other.
Yeah.
And completely destroy each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a great thing to have in your, yeah. you know, it's great to get, Matt can put me in my place and I can put him in his. And that's very healthy. That's
right.
very, it's something everyone needs, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I do, but we do get scared and, you know, especially with South Park, having done so many and having to just do them so fast, there's sometimes that I'm like, oh, I hope people don't take that as that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that, we really do think hard about things. You know
yeah.
what I mean? We really do want it to be taken the right way. And, you know, but it's just, it's not always going to be. But that's, you know, I think that it was true with Book of Mormon. We had a moment where we realized there's no TV set, there's no commercials, there's no MPAA, there's nobody here. We can do whatever we want.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're like, wow.
Those guys. Well, and someone who we haven't brought up yet, Ann Garofino, yeah. your executive or your producer and who produced Book of Mormon as well with Scott Rudin, she is the person who usually has to make those phone calls to
yes.
the censors.
Well, like, and it's perfect. It's always been a great relationship with Ann because, you know, she's great at her job and she's a great producer, but she's also has always played the role of kind of, she's the most wholesome of anyone we're with. And,
right.
And in a way...
She's a good Catholic girl, yes, me. Like, well.
And especially early on, it was us trying to get her to go, oh my God, that, you know, it's so much of the fun. You know, it was just me and me like, oh, well, what about this?
Yeah.
You know, and her going, oh my God, I do not want... It's like, well, you got to call them, man. You got to call them and see if they'll do that. You know,
Yeah. Stuff
like that. It's just like, you know, it's always... And I think that now, more than anything, she plays that role because she knows we need it.
Right.
I don't think it's really that true anymore.
Not much left to shock her.
Yeah, I think she's, you know, she's... But she does a good job still of playing that role, just like we all do, of making it all click.
Yeah.
Know?
She really makes a lot of it all come together.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen, I love the operation that you guys have at South Park Studios and how that was able to come to Broadway. I think that your excitement and not knowing exactly how things work was something that made it exciting for all of us because
yeah.
we were getting to like show off Broadway to you guys as
yeah,
well.
Absolutely. But it also made it feel like it was like the Evergreen Players for me. It was a bunch of people trying to put on a show.
So true.
And because, you know, you can see it, whether it's a movie or a TV or some of the musicals on Broadway. If it's corporate, you can see it.
Yeah.
And you can see that, oh, this is a producer that got the director, they got the right that made right. some deals with this person, and they kind of put it all together, and it's just kind of soulless at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then you can watch those things, which again, I think Sondheim said something to me about to that effect. It was like the same joy that I was getting out of it was like, here's just the people going, we're just going to put on a show, and we're going to make this as fun as we can. Not that everyone doesn't want it. Of course, everyone wants to do that. But I think we more than ever had this feeling of like, okay, this is kind of different.
Yeah.
This could burn in flames or this could be really cool.
Right. You know? Well, and it was like you guys were at a position in your career where you were like, we can take this chance.
Yes.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, what's the worst that's going to happen?
Exactly.
We'll just go
and
back
to
And
we were doing
our...
it purely out of love.
Yes.
It was not the most, it was not... From what everyone was telling us and all the information
right.
we had, it was by far not the lucrative
thing
for us to do.
We were going to lose money doing this.
We were going to lose it, you know, because we were putting money into it. But we're like, but it's just what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just what we think. It's just funny and we just want to make people laugh.
I'll never forget after one of our first previews, this bro came up to me at the stage door and he was like, man, that was amazing. I loved it. I was like, wow. He's like, yeah, I've never seen anything like that before. I can't believe I'm talking to you right now. You know, it's like he's like talking to Cartman or something and he goes, when's it going to air? I said, what?
Yeah, people,
he said, when's it going to be on TV? I said, no, you just saw a play.
You just saw it.
Like, we're going to do this all again tomorrow night. And he was like, what?
Yeah.
So like you brought so many people into theaters who never experienced it before and who are going to come to see a show in Los Angeles again, like for a decade now almost. It's Change Broadway. I really hope that you guys come back again. Do you ever think you're going to write a new one?
Yeah,
and also, is there a part for a really pasty white
there's
guy?
There's always a part for you. We'd write a show around you. We would. But, you know, it took a long time. And it took a long time before we even got to the stage of looking at it. But like you said, if I could recreate that time, you know, it was so special and such magic. And obviously it'd be terrifying to see like, okay, can we do it again?
Yeah.
You know, but we've talked about things here and there that's like, you know, this could be. But again, for us, and I think the reason we don't do a lot of stuff is because with everything we've done, we get to a point where we go, oh, you know, you could do this. And we go, that is sweet. Okay, that is weird and funny and cool.
Right.
And you know it like that. And it's never this thing of like, yeah, let's do something again. Okay, here's a few things. Oh, that sounds kind of interesting. It'll be that kind of thing where it's like one day, you know, if it happens, it'll be that one day we out of nowhere we're like, oh, you could do a musical like this, and we're like, oh, that's cool. And we'll be doing it within 2 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it'll be momentum. It's momentum, momentum,
right.
momentum for
right.
us, you know.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, it was great to talk to you.
And, you know, I have been a huge fan of your work before I met you, but you changed my life, you know? And you were so supportive of me personally while we were in readings and workshops. I was still going to that financial firm. I was going
back, in between.
You know, I remember like taking time off and making the schedule work with that temp job. And it's not just that Book of Mormon being a success is giving me this career, which it has. It's that it gave me, in those like really hard years of being an actor, hope to stay in New York, to keep going, to show up at my temp job and file paperwork, knowing there's this secret musical that I'm in that I can't tell anyone about.
Yeah, it's forbidden.
You know, and that to me, I remember the moment before our first preview. I was sitting at dinner with Brian Sears, and I was like, this is it. This is the last moment that it's just ours.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just that inside joke of you know, a few dozen people making this funny thing that we all had to keep secret. And now we're going to go see it in Los Angeles. Yeah. We're going to maybe know a couple of people on that stage. Yeah. But it's going to be their presentation of what we created together in a room.
And yeah.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a sad, nostalgic thing for
me,
too.
Yeah, it's a lot of emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a lot. But I can't tell you. I'm glad I get a chance to tell you publicly how grateful I am that you took that risk and how hard you and Matt and Bobby and everyone involved did.
All you guys. I mean, we all worked hard together, you know, and that's what was great about it was, you know, and for me, it was great to sit there and go, okay, oh, I don't have to do everything.
You know,
just sit there and go, oh, wow, look what, you know, things you would find in. And I'd be like, I would have never thought of that. And that's, you know, and it was great. And it was great to see, you know, you and everyone bring things to life and bring things to it. And it was such a living, growing thing that, you know, like I said, it was more like being a parent, you know, than anything, than just, and being just proud of all of you.
All right, well, let's do it again.
All right, we'll do it again. I'll try to think of something funny tomorrow.
Okay. That was my conversation with the creator of South Park, Trey Parker, and his show, The Book of Mormon. A very good show. I highly recommend it. We'll be playing at the Amundsen Theater here in Los Angeles February 18th through March 29th. Do not miss it. It's still so funny after all these years. Thank you so much for listening to the Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, brought to you by Podcast One. Be sure to rate, review, tell your friends, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Be sure to download new episodes every month right here on Podcast One, on the Podcast One app, or on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.